relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Welcome, dear friends, to a very special discussion here on America First with a man who knows about things that a lot of people discuss, but I think they don't know what they're talking about. It's a sexy concept to some. It's a dreadful concept. It is artificial intelligence. He is Dr. Craig Stanfill, the author of a new fictional work that has, I think, a rather factual message, if not more than one, that's called Terms of Service, Subject to Change Without Notice. Dr. Stanfill, welcome to America First.
Well, thank you for having me on, Dr. Gorka. It's a pleasure to be here.
So can I just start with the basics? I'm not a techie guy. This is a science fiction kind of dystopian future. I am a science fiction guy. Love science fiction. Philip K. Dick, Blade Runner, all that stuff. Star Wars, you name it. But let's start with the factual state of the art. What is the truth about artificial intelligence? What does it mean? And right now, 2021, where are we in terms of artificial intelligence?
What is going on right now is that artificial intelligence is being used by the technology companies.
Let's start at the beginning. What is artificial intelligence? You've got a PhD in it. For laymen, can you just define the term? What is it? Is it you know, thinking machines? What is it?
Artificial intelligence, a professor of mine in grad school said it's whatever the artificial intelligentsia says at any point in time.
That's
so it's historically had a rather flexible definition. In the present day, what it mostly means is what I would call data science, data-based artificial intelligence, which is an area of research that I was active in the early 90s, late 80s. And the basic idea is this. You've got a routine decision that needs to be made, and the way you get a computer to make it is you get a human to look at a bunch of data and transcribe the data into what you want the AI to do. And some very powerful machine learning algorithms have been developed that will, across a wide variety of topics, replicate what that person would have done. And so we all know that Alexa and so forth and other services can transcribe voice, and they do a very good job of it. And the way they did that was they took a bunch of people speaking, and then somebody would transcribe it, and eventually the AI learns what it is that you said. The same thing with translation from English to German or whatever that some of the automatic translators do. And it's all based on, you know, sort of monkey see, monkey do. You know, you have a human do something over and over and over and over again, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of times, and then you put it into an algorithm that captures what it is about the input that causes the output to be a certain way, and then they take that and they can replicate it. And that allows them to use AI as a sort of a force multiplier. An example of that is Facebook. Facebook has something like, I think, 15,000 content moderators and 2 billion users. And obviously, with that small a number of moderators, you can't get much traction out of it. So what they do is they use artificial intelligence to replicate the decisions as to what the moderators do and, you know, mark something up as being, you know, a bad or forbidden topic. And then they can actually use this, I think, to censor you. I don't know for a fact, but I think that, you know, you sometimes hear about somebody being, their account being suppressed or shut down by quote-unquote accident. What I think is going on, I don't know what the facts of the matter are, but I think that that's an AI in action. The AI saw something about what you said and said, you can't say that. And then you could appeal and maybe a human will look at it and undo the decision, but you've already been censored by an AI. And that's what I think is going on. And it should be scary to people.
Let me just play the ingenue. This isn't even devil's advocate. This is just layman again. What you described to me sounds like a program. What is the difference between a program or an effective pattern in a computer vice artificial intelligence? Where is that? I'm familiar with the, is it the Turing test that helps you identify whether something has achieved that level? In practical terms, what makes artificial intelligence intelligence? I'm not interested in what the intelligentsia says. You, as the expert, the author of this new book, what makes it actually worthy of the word intelligence, Dr. Stanfill?
What makes it worthy of intelligence is that you are producing a result via machine learning rather than programming. A programmer has to sit down, you know, so if A, then B. And, you know, here's the formula for the circumference of a circle, or, you know, just set up a bunch of rules and write a bunch of code. And the problem is that it's very brittle. The person who is writing the code can't possibly anticipate everything that might happen in hundreds of thousands or millions of examples. And it's hard to come up with rules. People, for example, for years and years tried to write programs to do translation, language to language, translate German to English or English to German. And people were doing that back when I got my PhD. That's, you know, was an older form of AI called rule-based programming, or just to write a program to do the translation. And that really never got very far because it was very difficult to produce the rules, and it was very time-consuming, and it didn't necessarily give good results. When they started using machine learning and take a bunch of examples and then train something like a neural network to do the same thing, it is vastly more capable. They can do things that you were never able to write programs to do.
Can you give an example of that machine learning and what AI looks like in practice beyond content filtering on Facebook? Can you give something that's a little bit less negative?
Well, here's something where I think that the ultimate result of this is a good thing, but it's still a little spooky. Australia recently brought a system into play for spotting people who were using cell phones while driving or failing to buckle their seatbelts. And, you know, hey, getting people to not wreck their cars by talking on the cell phone and getting to not die in a fiery crash because they're not wearing their seatbelts, that's a socially positive thing. And what they did was they took camera photos of people's, you know, cars through the windshield. So, you know, you go under a camera, it takes a picture of you sitting in your car. And then they show a bunch of those to people and say, is this person wearing a seatbelt? Yes or no. Is this person talking on their cell phone? Yes or no. And I think that they've now just put this into play in Australia. And, you know, in terms of what they're doing here specifically, you know, who can argue with let's not have fiery crashes? But it's kind of spooky. And, you know, where does this go? If they can do that, what else can they do?
Well, exactly. You know, are they going to take photos of you eating, you know, two donuts when you shouldn't have two donuts? Is there going to be a, you know, when you see what's happening in Australia right now with COVID vaccines, tracking your movements, having to verify that you're on lockdown? This, I think, is perhaps the message of your book, Terms of Service. So let's discuss first things first. People need to get your book, Terms of Service. But where do you put it in the pantheon of science fiction? Because right now there's quite a healthy debate. Are we living in the Orwellian future of 1984 with Big Brother, with a dictatorial state? Some have said, no, we are actually in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, where it's measured out pleasure. It is the control of passions or actually giving into them, the state dulling your desire for freedom. In that spectrum, where does your vision of the future lie?
Very strongly Orwellian. This is, at some level, it is a retelling of 1984 in light of artificial intelligence. And instead of Big Brother and the government, you have corporations. And that's relevant because these days, corporations are taking on more and more of the function and more of the role of government. And if you're on the internet, then the internet companies, Twitter, Facebook, Google, they're the government. And I would classify them as sort of benign dictatorships or something like that. And the problem with benign dictatorships is what happens when they stop being benign. In China, they're not benign, of course.
Right. So let's talk about what that means. Where does the source of that benign dictatorship come from? You talk about big tech. You talk about the application of artificial intelligence. Do you posit that this begins with a positive intent, that these people want to do good, but they're paving the road to hell with good intentions, and at some point it's going to turn and be more like the social credit system or the dictatorial things we're seeing in China? Where are we on that scale right now?
I would say that it is still relatively benign, except for the interference of the technology companies in political discussion and anything that touches on political matters. But even the social credit system is starting to take hold. Boris Johnson in the UK, I think, has spoken in favor of or is supporting a social credit system where you get negative points for eating fast food because, you know, the government doesn't want you to eat fast food. Now, fast food's not terribly helpful. So again, the intent is not necessarily sinister. They just want people to eat healthy. But you always have to ask, where does this go? What could they do with this? And how can it be turned into a political weapon? And, you know, as we've observed over the last several years, anything that can be turned into a political weapon will be turned into a political weapon. I mean, baseball is now a political weapon.
Right.
Go figure.
Right. So explain to those listening, to our millions of listeners and viewers across the world, why are you disturbed? Clearly, you've used the fictional métier to send a message about what's happening right now, what could happen in the future. Explain to those who just think, oh, it's just Facebook and it's just measures to stop extremists. Why should people be worried now, Dr. Stanfill?
Because I think we need to understand where this technology and where this world might take us in order to avoid going there. And again, on the political front, I think that the technology companies and their use of artificial intelligence is already way outstripping what we want them to do. And where does it end? The companies say, we can do whatever we want to within our terms of service. We can make you shut up. We can ban you. And we don't even really have to explain what the rules are. We don't even have to follow our rules. I think the state of the internet is actually kind of a little bit like back in revolutionary era in the United States, where you got this king. And the king says, silence, knave, or off with your head, or you can't be in this country anymore. I'm sending you off into exile. And the word of the king is law. And I don't think we want to live under kings in the real world, and I don't think we want to live under kings in the virtual world either. And whether you've got a benevolent king or a malevolent king, I just object to the concept of kings prima facie.
Help us peek behind the curtain. We've seen again and again and again the testimony of the likes of Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg on Capitol Hill talking about or being challenged when it comes to political censorship on their platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and so forth. And time and time again, the same answer or the same variety of answers are given that, I'm not aware of that. Or the system just did it. It's just a fault of the system. Is either of those true? I mean, the second one is even more scary than the first one, that they don't know what's going on. Or are they just prevaricating and is this all lies?
I don't have any insight into the truth or falsity of what they know and whether they know what's going on. But one of the things I can tell you is that with artificial intelligence, you're replicating the thought patterns and the judgments of humans. And so you've got somebody who looks at a bunch of data and looks at a bunch of pictures and say, is this hate speech? Is this a disturbing, hateful image? And the AIs will replicate the decisions of those individuals. And if those people who are training the AIs have political biases or, you know, access to grind, then inevitably those biases and predispositions will show up in the AI. So it's not even necessary for Dorsey anybody like that to say, I want you to do this or that. Just simply by having a highly liberal, highly politicized workforce, for example, you will end up with highly political AIs. It's just sort of the way the technology works, because, you know, monkey see, monkey do. And if it's a good monkey, you'll get a good AI. And if it's a bad monkey, you'll get a bad AI.
If it's a bad monkey, if it's a monkey that hates those that politically disagree with it, are we talking about a potential Skynet scenario? Are we talking about a moment where, you know, AI becomes self-conscious around the globe and conservatives start being put in camps? I mean, that is the Terminator scenario. Is that even feasible?
I think one of the important things to do in terms of assessing risk is to, this is an old military saw, worry about capabilities more than intent. You can't really judge intent. You can't predict what people will do, but you can assess the capabilities. And so, you know, Skynet, I don't know, but I certainly don't want to create a technological infrastructure that allows that to happen. And if I think that somebody is creating Skynet, I certainly think we got to stop them.
Yeah, let me push back on that. As somebody who spent decades teaching a strategy and a military theory, capabilities without intent is irrelevant in threat analysis. That's how we lost in Vietnam. So, you know, you can have all the capabilities in the world. If you don't have the intent, it doesn't matter. You can have pathetic capabilities. You can have sharpened sticks and rusty AKs. But if you've got the intent and the will to fight, you can even defeat a superpower that doesn't have the will to fight. So that's my two pence on the analysis of threats. Okay, let's talk about solutions. Everybody needs to check out Terms of Service, our guest's book, Craig Stanfield, available now, Terms of Service. Let's go beyond the science fiction. Let's go beyond the positing of this dark future where AI targets individuals for their belief systems. Let's live in the real world right now. What is to be done? Do you have recommendations when it comes to social media? There's, you know, various options that have been touted that we have to remove the 230 immunity provided the companies in the legislation from the 1990s that says they're not publishers, they're social networking platforms, which of clearly they're not because they are editorializing. Do we break them up as conservatives? We don't like necessarily to have big government intervention. We've done it with Marbell. But in general, when it comes to the perversion of what should be a tool, artificial intelligence, have you identified a way forward or a way to ensure ourselves against its further distortion?
I think that, first of all, one of the issues with social media is what's called the network effect. And this has been long known in communications for, you know, I guess close to a century. If you've got a network that has one person on it, it's not useful for anything. If you've got a network with 100 people on it, then there's 100 different. Then there's 10,000 different combinations of people who could be talking to each other. If you've got a million people on a network, then it grows, you know, as the square of the number of the people on the network. And you need to have something big like Facebook or Twitter to provide that network where anybody can, in principle, talk to anybody else, like the telephone system. I think that, so I don't think that you can really break them up. And we've seen this where competitors to Facebook and Twitter have shown up, Parler, MeWe, various other platforms that I've been on. But because of the network effect, they never gain much traction. There's just sort of like not many people there. I think that what we ought to do is software engineering called refactoring. I think that we need to separate the functionality of Facebook and similar platforms to provide that communications network and separate that from the content moderation aspect. So let Facebook continue to be, you know, as huge as they are, and let Twitter continue to be as huge as they are. But I would like to have choice in the algorithm that determines what is on my Facebook feed and choice on who I put trust in as a fact checker and so forth. So, for example, just as an example, people from QAnon show up on my author's page all the time. And I have no need, I have no use for QAnon. They're a bunch of crazies from 4chan. If you pay any attention to somebody from 4chan, you know, you need to have a head examined. I know people are going to hate me for saying that. But I would just, like, you know, love to have a content moderation system where it says, you know, if somebody says there's a graphite microchip in the vaccine, I just say, I don't want to see that, and just boot that off of my network. Facebook, by the way, does not boot that off. So their content moderation isn't doing what I want to do in terms of getting rid of certain people. And but they are getting rid of things that I do want to see. I want to control what I want to see. That's not an unreasonable request. I want to choose who fact checks my information feed. That's not an unreasonable request. And because they've bundled together their functionality as a communication medium, as a town square, with the functionality of controlling what you see and the functionality of fact checking and so forth, they're making decisions on my behalf that are beyond what I want them to be making on my behalf. I can decide what is true and false. I can decide what fact checkers I believe or not. And I think there is a need for fact checking, but I want to pick a fact checker. I want to control what I want to see. Facebook is, for example, now starting to suppress political speech because, for whatever reason, so that they make it less common that I'm going to see political stuff in my Facebook feed. That's not what I want. I'm very interested in politics and current events. And by not showing me that stuff, then they're not doing me a service. And in addition, I like a diversity of opinions. And I think that to the extent that there is political content, it tends to be a little bit of an echo chamber where most of the people that show up on my people who are like-minded, and I would like to actually hear more from people who don't think like me, because I value all points of view, but they're not making good decisions. They're getting rid of stuff that I want to see, and they're not showing me the things that I do want to see. And you know, why? There's no reason for that, except for the fact that they're structured where as this monolith.
Is there perhaps a problem that's larger than social media and the censorious behavior of the tech oligarchs? Because I look at the state of not just education, but general knowledge and common sense. And for example, let me share this with you. When I travel the country, I give speeches and people ask me advice, and sometimes it's career advice. And I say the same thing wherever I am to whatever the audience is. And I don't care whether it's, you know, kids in high school or whether it's, you know, retirees. I give them the same piece of advice. If you want to better yourself, at least, you know, once a day, switch this bloody thing off. Off, I don't mean silence it, switch it, your phone off, and read a book with pages, preferably one that's more than 100 years old, preferably a classic that's centuries old or maybe thousands of years old, and you will do yourself a service. Beyond AI, Dr. Stanfill, is there perhaps a bigger problem of our over-dependence on technology in general and being spoon-fed curated information, whether I chose the curator or not?
I think that there's a lot of value in reading widely. I'll confess that I don't read as widely these days as I should, just due to lack of time. But, you know, that's very good advice. I don't know.
You don't know. Okay. I've I've taken something to the AI expert that he's going to have to noodle on. I'm so excited. Okay, so let's cut to the chase. Let's talk about what this means to all of our listeners and viewers. They should check out your book, Terms for Service. They should educate themselves on what, in fact, big tech is doing and these various scenarios for the future, whether it's the Brave New World Aldous Huxley scenario, whether it's the 1984 Orwellian, or my personal favorite, the dystopian future that is Philip K. Dick's Blade Runner, or Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which was the original title of the book. Is there anything you recommend to the individual American when it comes to all of this? They're not legislators. They can't recommend these companies be broken up, or they can't write legislation to remove their 230 immunity. Is there something individuals should be thinking about or doing when it comes to technology, information, and AI today that they may not be doing?
I don't know that there's much that you can do except for getting your information from a variety of sources. Certainly, you should not be getting all of your information and all of your news from Facebook. You should not be getting all of your information and all of your news from Twitter. There are a shocking number of people who get the majority of their information on what's going on in the world from those sources. Yeah. And I think that is fundamentally unwise, because any one point of view is going to be distorted. And if you then crawl into a bubble where you are carefully insulated from other points of view, you may find yourself living in a world that doesn't exist. And this is very much one of the things that's in my book, for example, is there's this metaphor of virtual reality. There's a virtual reality system, that's an important part of the book, that can create any reality that you want. And our hero, Kim, spends a lot of time in virtual reality, and then she gets into the real world and realizes that the world that she is living in is every bit as artificial and disconnected from what's really going on as anything that happens inside the computer. And I think people need to understand that the world is what you see. And if you let people control what you see and what you hear and what you know, then you're living in a reality that somebody else has created, and that may not be connected to what is actually happening. So you need to always look with skepticism at sources of information, step out of your bubble, and say, well, how do I know that this is true? How do I know that this is what's really going on? And just choose multiple sources of information. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't do that. You have to be intelligent consumers of information.
Yeah, I think that's fabulous advice. Just be cognizant of who's providing your information, how much control they have over it, and whether you have other sources of news for making your decisions with other sources of information. That's fabulous. Last question is rather a personal one for you. As somebody who's written several books that are nonfiction, that are in my wheelhouse of national security and politics, and who's now venturing to write a fiction work to send a message wrapped in a good story, I'm curious, because when I first heard about Terms of Service, I thought this was going to be a nonfiction work from an AI expert talking about the situation today. And I was, you know, pleasantly surprised to see that it's a work of science fiction. It's about the future, but with a very, very relevant message for today. I'm curious, what made you take that route? Why did you choose the fictional work to talk about very serious issues from today? What made you take that decision?
What I found over the last several years, as I became alarmed about the censorship in social media and so forth, was, you know, I would talk to my friends and they would say, I'd say, they're censoring us. That's not right. And they would say, well, they're private companies, they're private actors. They can do what they want. And I said, haven't you ever read any of the science fiction novels where the companies have taken over? They're not good worlds. You don't want to live in them. And, you know, that's actually sort of like part of the Blade Runner connection there. There's a lot of Blade Runner in the book, in addition to the not just the ambiance, but the AIs. So I lost my train of thought there.
So is that the reason that, you know, your friends were telling you that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were telling me that the companies can do anything they want. They can write their own terms of service. And so I said, okay, well, I'm going to show you what happens if you do that. I'm going to play a what if, speculative infection. Okay, let's take your assertion that it's okay for monopolistic companies to write their own terms however they want. And now here's a world that you don't want to live in, where there is no freedom, there is no choice, there is no individuality, that flows entirely from that premise that companies can set their terms of service however they choose. And I said it far in the future to try to reach across to my liberal friends, and a number of liberal friends of mine, I've got many, have read this book and enjoyed it, because it's a little too easy to get caught up in terms of the present narrative, you know, Team Blue versus Team Red. And, you know, we've got some differences in this country that I hope we can resolve at some point and come up with something we can all live with. But that divide tends to color everything. And so, for example, big tech right now seems to be on the side of Team Blue.
Yeah.
You know, just wait, you'll get your turn. I set it in a fictional setting so that people could maybe look beyond what is happening today to the power structure we're creating, and what are the consequences of that power structure, and does that power structure lead to a world that we want to live in? And, you know, I think it's pretty emphatic, no.
Yeah, no, I think that's very, very clear. I'm so glad not only did your friends help you come to that decision, but that they read the book as well. Guys, check it out. Terms of Service, Subject to Change Without Notice. We've been talking to its author, expert in artificial intelligence, Craig Stanfill. Dr. Stanfill, thank you. God bless.
Thank you for having me on.